be a $5 or $6 or whatever the range user fee.
Well, that was my second to this gasoline.
Whatever. I'm just taking the concept. But you then said throw it on the water bill. The water bill, of course, is the water sewer bill.
Right.
Is a third of the bill. Sewer stormwater is 2/3.
Right.
I have this vague recollection that I've spent the last 2 years of my life involved in various fights, with you included, on keeping water sewer separate from the general fund. If we put this fee on a bill, aren't we violating the very principle that you took up in fighting for a water district, the merging of general fund and ratepayer-funded enterprises?
We are, Mr. Commissioner Fish, like we all know, making politics is like making sausage, and I would say can't anticipate the city coming back with this kind of.
No, I appreciate it.
It's a lot more cleaner.
There's plenty of reasons to use the platform for water sewer. I have objected because I've heard loud and clear from people like you.
Yes, but last May, I actually did support that. You would ask me whether I'd support it. I thought it would raise the water bill, but it was going to be like 5% to 6% kind of thing.
Okay. I just
and so I didn't, if given a preference of an income tax or a fee on my water bill, and you say you're going to do it to us, I had to pick my poison. That's what you're telling me to do.
I appreciate that. I'm just highlighting an irony in that proposal.
I know that. Bill Clinton say
a good
about
fight
that.
Over that question.
Right. No, thank you. Okay. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah. So it may well be that if we have a list of options on the advisory ballot, we may have both a flat rate fee and a gas tax.
But I would encourage you to refer it because, like most of the people here, they don't have much trust. And then the January 2013 city auditor report that preceded the February one said, where did the money go?
Right.
So it's
very legitimate questions.
So there's not a lot of trust, and you need to encourage people not to be so irritated by asking which one of these would you want referred.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Good evening.
Good evening. My name's Rick Barco from Southeast Portland. Mayor Hales, commissioners. The trust word keeps coming up. I think that's paramount in any of the leadership decisions that you make. Just to start off, I had some materials. I'm a little new to this, so I should have been here on the first go-around with McCullough, and I have some materials that are pertinent to what Mr. McCullough discussed about the business fee.
Okay. Well, we can.
I have my contact information on there, so if you want to ask me some questions about it, I can.
All right. Thank you.
So I just have a question. What's Multnomah County going to charge for a special election?
It depends on how many other things are on the ballot. It'll cost somewhere between $100,000 and $300,000 to do this.
My recommendation, I don't know if this is feasible, but could you put a survey on a Portland City website and just advertise that? And
it's another way to do it. What this will do, of course, is give every citizen of Portland a chance to tell us what they believe is right.
Right.
Not everyone will return a ballot, of course, but everybody is given the opportunity in our state with mail ballots to express their opinion.
Right.
So it's used in other states much more than it's been used here. I guess someone told me today that the city of Portland, during the Goldschmidt administration, which has been a while, did an advisory ballot at one point. But it's obviously not a common occurrence here.
Yeah. So I guess that would be the question, whether or not the city could do a mail-out questionnaire or whether or not being more less expensive, do it through Multnomah County. I don't know.
Well, there will be a May special election anyway because there are Portland school board seats and Portland Community College, I believe, seats that are up for election. But the incremental cost of additional parts of the ballot is charged to the governmental agency that's put the thing on the ballot. So we'll pay a portion of that cost based on our portion of the paperwork.
Okay. Mayor, does that mean that if, for example, this was on a general election ballot in a presidential year, for example, with a lot of stuff on the ballot, does that necessarily mean that our costs would be substantially lower?
Our proportionate cost would most likely be lower.
Because there's so many other items on the ballot.
Right.
Okay. So moving on, what I hear generally here is the notion, the proposal that one thing's going to solve the problem. We need X, and we need to raise it through something. And I've heard over the course of discussion over the past year, parking fees. Myself personally, the gas tax makes sense at some level for the city, but to address the issue with people coming in, the commuters in the Tri-County area, of maybe Metro getting involved in collecting some, assessing a tax. I like the idea of maybe some small increment on the payroll tax.
Sir, can I ask you a question
yes.
on that? Let's say that this is referred in the May ballot, and let's say the results are inconclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mayor has said this is advisory only.
Right.
Is one of the options you'd want us to consider after that event, perhaps some cocktail, if you will, some blend
Absolutely.
Of a number
Absolutely.
That together get to the goal
yes.
the mayor has established?
Absolutely.
And so you would ask, that's not, I'm not sure that's something we would test, but that would might be your advice to us to look at a package.
I would hope that in the coming months, you put your very talented analyst to good use and take a look at, and it's down the road, I understand. There's a whole spectrum of things that are going to be happening here. Marijuana tax, the rising tide lifting all the boats in property taxes. These are always obviously, you know, funds, general fund, both general fund and gas tax. But this notion that gasoline taxes at the state level, maybe at the regional level, at TriMet level, or at the city level, give us an idea on what your budget, the savings maybe in resources, materials for doing the road. Give us an idea on how much of a shortfall there actually is based on some hard analysis. And I think we'd really appreciate that.
Okay, no, we'll have that.
And come up with a cocktail, as Commissioner Fish suggested. Yep,
good.
That's a good idea.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you all. Okay.
Nice. Next three are John Cronin, Teresa Kishi Soto, and Jim Carlock. And they'll be followed by Roger Hull, Hiram Asmuth, and Richard Donan.
Good evening. Welcome.
Hi. John Cronin, Southwest Portland. Other people before me have expressed issues of trust, and to me, just haven't made the case. It's not that I haven't read all of this, I haven't gone to budget meetings, but we've gone in a short amount of time from your perspective to having roads that were more or less okay to a huge problem. And that hasn't been explained to me. I'm willing to consider any of the tax alternatives. And I'm sure this issue hasn't become as serious as it has from this council. This has taken years to get to this point. And it may be uncomfortable to talk about it, about prior commissioners, but it's obvious that this has gone on for a long time. And until the case is made better and more specifically as to how we got here, I'm not trusting any more money to the city to fix it.
Mayor, when was the last year that gas tax was increased?
The federal gas tax was last increased in 1993. The state gas tax, I believe, was at last increased in 2009. The city gets a portion of each of those. And actually, yeah, I'll give you a copy of this audit. And it's one of the things that you ought to read. But you'll see that what's happened over that time is that the city's overall transportation budget has gone up and down a bit, mostly because of things that are funded as a one-time capital project. But the general spending on maintenance and repaving, you're right, it's been a long-term decline. Mm-hmm. The council actually in 2009 made a decision that I disagreed with, which was to say we're just simply not going to maintain residential streets anymore, and passed an ordinance, Resolution 36672, that said that. This council has rescinded that ordinance mm-hmm. and has said we're responsible as a city for both residential street maintenance and arterial street maintenance, albeit we are not keeping up with that responsibility. So I'd encourage you, I'll give you my copy. I'd encourage you to not only read this, but you know, take a look at that long
term. Yeah. Thank you.
Let me ask Commissioner Novick this, because often in these discussions, there's this sense that somehow Portland is exceptional. We have roads, bridges, and infrastructure throughout the country that are collapsing. Commissioner Novick, is Portland unique?
No, Portland is not unique. I mean, the United States as a whole spends 2.3% of gross domestic product in infrastructure. In Europe, the figure is 5%. In China, it's now 9%. And roads and bridges are deteriorating around the country. Los Angeles was about to send a measure to the ballot this fall to address their crumbling roads, concluded that they were unlikely to get the required, I think they have a two-thirds percentage, so their roads are continuing to crumble. 28 other Oregon cities have passed some sort of local fee mechanism to address the same problems. One bit of Portland-specific history that I think is worth noting is that back in the 80s, the city used to devote a significant percentage of utility license fees to transportation, and the council gradually concluded, I mean, starting in the late 80s, that they would divert that into the general fund, which is used primarily for police, fire, parks, and housing, which people aren't excited about cutting.
Yeah, that was in the past. The utility franchise fee was dedicated to transportation, but after the passage of Measure 5, the then city council, none of us, but the then city council said, we're going to try to hold police, fire, parks harmless or less harmed and stopped dedicating that utility franchise revenue to transportation. So that's part of what started that that long-term slide. You can argue that they made a great decision or a terrible decision, but that's why they did it, is that Measure 5. And Lynn Reed's here from the Oregonian. The Oregonian at the time, he wasn't there then either, argued that we should pass Measure 5 because that would lead to voter approval of a sales tax. How's that working out? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we haven't done much in terms of these big picture structural reforms, and that's why 28 other cities have passed some kind of local street utility fee in Oregon. And that's really where we started on this issue. We looked at Oregon City that had one of $11.56 a month per household and said, well, that seems like rough justice to us. That's kind of where we started on this discussion.
But, sir, I'm not advocating one side or another, but if the gas tax has – if the gas tax, which is a primary source of revenue for roads, if that hasn't changed in over a decade, and if with all the advances in fuel efficiency we've seen people use less gas, then that as a revenue source has become less robust. The commissioner in charge of the Bureau can come and say, let's add money to – parking revenues, we can find all kinds of things. Council can pass a dozen, 100 resolutions as to where we're going to put a diminishing resource into what street. If we don't have the resources, we can't do the job. And so fundamentally, there is a resource question. And we can have the argument about whether we go into the general fund and make substantial changes. Those are tough. That's a tough conversation because most people want to have a certain amount of money allocated to public safety and parks and other things. I'm not advocating one way or another, but part of the challenge we face is outside of our control, and there just aren't the money. We can ascribe it to this or that policy decision. People can say it was a good idea or a bad idea to pursue the streetcar. It really wouldn't change the fundamentals. The fundamentals are the primary revenue source has not kept pace with inflation, and we don't have the resources, and we're in the same boat as a lot of other cities across the country. And so we're now asking you for what ideas do you have? And there are no bad ideas, but we're asking you for what ideas you have.
Not being an accountant, that seems to be what strikes me mostly is that we went from this not being discussed to it being a huge problem. And it strikes me that gas fund revenues, prices, gas has obviously skyrocketed in that time. So revenues to you must have gone up to some degree.
Well, actually, it has been discussed. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten anywhere. I was transportation commissioner in 2001 and argued that the legislature should increase the gas tax, and I failed miserably because they didn't then.
Right.
We also attempted a local revenue measure in 2001, but were pushed back by the business community that threatened to refer it to the voters and kill it. And then Commissioner Sam Adams, in charge of transportation, in 2007 attempted a local measure, and he was also threatened by the business community or members of the business community that they would take this to the ballot and kill it. So we've actually been having this discussion in the city of Portland for 14 years. Now, you can blame us for having a long conversation with no results, but we have not been completely, we corporately, as a city, as a community, we have not been totally unaware of this problem. I would say we have been unwilling to face it squarely, and that's what we're trying to do now.
Then my suggestion, in the spirit of being positive about this, is I would say you can't sell this often enough. And when I read articles about this, I don't see a half a dozen bullet points that I'm sure you could come up with that would attempt to sell me on this better than my shock at all of a sudden you need vast amounts of money. Does that make sense?
Sure, sure. No,
appreciate so that's that. My suggestion.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much. Good evening.
Hello. Excuse me. I am Teresa Casey Soto. Feliz Año Nuevo. Happy New Year. I am one of those people who in the past have been very disgruntled when I have heard that there have been improvements made in places other than where I live. I live in Southeast Portland. I live 200 feet from the corner of Southeast 125th and Powell Boulevard. And basically, I had come tonight to ask that when a decision is made by the voters, and there's a formula out there to get the funding for maintenance of the streets and safety, I was basically here to say, please, please, please make sure that safety is right there in front of you in neon lights. In order to get from where I live to Safeway walking west, it is very, very difficult because the cars that are turning have to stop if they're turning into another street, and the ones behind them will not wait. So it is very frequent that all of us who walk there are threatened with death. There's also a lot of families there. You see moms with pushing their strollers and holding on to strollers. And not too long ago, I think you know that someone was killed again right there on that corner. So basically, that's why I had come tonight. Now that I've been listening, I want to say a big thank you to all of you for taking the time to have us here tonight. I know some of us came with a different agenda than what you have, the criteria you have put forth, Mayor Hales. I also want to thank Commissioner Novick for being very brave and taking this on, the whole transportation issue. And I'm also talking about transportation as it relates to other needs that we have in Southeast Portland. I want to thank Commissioner Fritz because she has been an advocate of those of us who ride the bus. I am with Opal Bus Riders Unite. I'm also with East Portland Action Plan. I'm going to close by saying keep on letting us know what's going on. I really appreciate having been invited to one of the meetings that Commissioner Novick had. I was representing several constituencies, I guess you could call it, and I really appreciate that. And I am very well aware of the fact that people do not trust City Hall. So anything you can do to bring back that trust will be greatly appreciated. And of course, I would like for you to always remember that Southeast Portland deserves the rest of what deserves the same as what the rest of the city gets. And I thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for your advocacy, and I appreciate you pointing the safety issue out. I, as the police commissioner, I get, unfortunately, reports about things that go terribly every night. And in the last 2 years, we've killed twice as many of our fellow citizens with cars as we have with guns or knives. 35 traffic deaths in 2013, and I think roughly 40 in 2014, and quite a few on Powell. So appreciate you raising that. That
2013, I believe there were 8 people in Southeast Portland killed out of 13.
Yeah. Thank
8
you very
deaths
much.
Were in Southeast Portland. Yeah, thank you for terrible. Acknowledging that. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Jim Carlock, and it's been a long time since I've been down here, but this is worth it. So I'm going to save you a lot of money writing ballot initiatives. I'll write them for you. Number one, shall we have a tax for streets, yes or no? Number two, shall we require those who do the most road damage pay in proportion to their damage? And, of course, I'm referring to TriMet, which does the most damage, and large trucks. You notice not on this list is cars, bicycles, pedestrians, because they do virtually no damage to the roads. And as to funding, Measure number three, should Portland quit wasting street money on streetcars that are slower than walking and on light rail that moves less people per dollar than cars and reallocate that money to streets? Should Portland, measure number four, should Portland quit installing speed bumps that kill people by delaying emergency services, quit adding bubble curbs that put pedestrians closer to fast-moving traffic, quit building bike lanes that remove road capacity, quit building bike boulevards that essentially steal streets for bikes, and take the money to apply to street repair? Should Portland quit wasting money on things like, 100 pages of tree rules? It really takes a 100-page document to tell somebody that they shouldn't cut down a 100-year-old elm tree? Give me a break. Stop giving $100 million in property tax money to crony developers via the Portland Development Commission. I looked it up this afternoon. There's $107 million in property taxes that are actually collected in the PDC district that goes to the PDC that, in essence, pays for a bureaucracy and buying favors for rich developers to give you guys campaign donations to keep up. I believe it's called the Iron Triangle, if you look it up in Wikipedia. It's endemic in government. Measure number six. Should we stop giving exemptions from paying property taxes to favorite developers? Should we stop selling land to favorite developers at below market and give the money to repair the streets? Should we shut down useless city agencies such as sustainability, climate change, biofuels, and the PDC and apply the saved money to street repair? Now, of course, this requires that you actually run the city for the people instead of for some of your cronies. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next three.
Are Roger Hull, Hiram Asmuth, and Richard Donan? Okay. And they'll be followed by Richard Essie. I believe the first name is Lynn Fung, and Michael O'Callaghan.
Good evening. Go ahead.
Good evening. I'm Richard Donan. I've been down here before. And actually, I've been down here more than when I worked for Commissioner Lindbergh doing, I'm a, an energy consultant, doing solar setback rules for the city, which was a lot of fun, actually. I'm here with something positive. I'd like to see, because I have a one-track mind, obviously, as you've heard from me before, that there is a parking fee similar to, but not exactly like, the city of Chicago and lots of other cities. I recently spoke with a PBOT person last week about the parking sticker fee program I suggested, and I was amazed to hear all the incorrect assumptions that were being made, including one from the city attorney's office that it wouldn't work because it had to be affixed to vehicle registration, and it never did, actually. The proposal I sent out had nothing to do with vehicle registration. You know, I love this city. I live here for a specific reason, because it's the best city in that I've visited, lots of them in the U.S. And I've known the city from working with commissioners to be one that, you know, looks for making things work rather than finding excuses why they don't work. So I haven't heard putting on the ballot as a positive measure a parking sticker fee. It's simple to maintain. The city already does have a small department in transportation that issues these stickers right, for various parts of the city. The cost to do it would be very, very small. It could be done with existing folks.
So, sir, I earlier asked Thomas Lanham that question, because I read a piece also recently about, you know, having requiring everyone that brings their car downtown to have a sticker. And I think we probably have to put out a document that explains the advice that we've been given. But the answer that I got was that a sticker that you have to buy to put on your car to be able to come down, you know, to park, is construed as like a vehicle registration fee. And the current law is that we are preempted from doing a, and Steve, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, but we're preempted from doing a vehicle registration fee.
Only
the county can do it. So there's a legal bind. It's an elegant solution in my mind, and I appreciate you putting it on the table, but we've been told that we don't have the authority to do it. Now, I think it'd be useful if we put something in writing and put it on the website so people could read it and say whether they think that's bunk or makes sense.
Or even get a formal opinion from the state.
Get a formal opinion, but you're
right.
The point is very well taken. Just I want you to understand, we've been told that legally we can't do that, but let's take the time to explore that.
Maybe yes, but because I researched ORS statutes, and cities, municipalities have the ability to impose parking fees, as in when you park downtown,
mm-hmm.
or anywhere there's a meter that you have to put the money in so you don't get a parking ticket, because the ticket's way more than the 75 cents it costs to park. It would run on that exact same, it would piggyback on the existing program that you already use to, you know, keep traffic moving. And, you know, I understand from the business point of view, you want to turn over out there.
So, sir, you've taken the time to come and give us a thoughtful suggestion. And Commissioner Novick, could we ask that we just get something in writing that explains whether we can or can't do that and why?
Absolutely.
Yeah, particularly since, and he's right, particularly since we already not only have regulated parking where there are meters, but we have the sticker program in different parts of the city, like the Central East Side,
right.
where people who live or work in that district have to have a sticker.
Right.
So we kind of have crossed that line in one way. Now,
exactly.
We may be told there's a difference between that and a general program. We'll want to hear what, but you're right that we ought to ask the question straight up.
I would like to see that on the ballot. And I figured roughly a $25 once a year, which is about $2 a month, sticker fee that go put on the stickers would also end up getting people who come in from Vancouver that want to park. And I'm not talking just about downtown, because I talked with the county, and they actually have meter readers out in various areas. Hawthorne Boulevard is actually patrolled. They also patrol Powell Boulevard, several other ones. So we're not just talking about Central City. We're talking about the entire city in terms of where businesses are located, which is where people really want to go. I'm not talking about going into people's garages or their residential neighborhoods to say, hey, you can't park on the street in front of your house.
Let me just say thank you for framing the issue, and I think it would be good for us to get something in writing and share from you and see whether you agree with it, get the city attorney to give us an opinion.
And check I would be happy to come in and talk with the PBOT
folks.
Check
with the county, and
okay, good.
Let's not leave this up in the air. You've raised an idea. Let's make sure that either we can or can't do it.
Yeah, it also gets, Mr. Sargent testified earlier, I don't know if you heard him, but you know that the goal of getting non-residents to contribute based on the fact that they use the streets too, it obviously is one of the few revenue mechanisms that gets at that problem.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Now we will get the legal analysis of what is our window, what does it look like, do we have one at all?
And where the wiggle room is in that,
right.
I mean, I know.
Yeah.
It's
how you ask the question.
There's holes in legalese.
If the city attorney says, well, it sounds crazy, but it just might work, we wouldn't want to pass something and then have 2 years of litigation and then find out that we lost. I mean, I'd want to be pretty sure that it's something we could do. And the city attorney said so far they're pretty sure it's something we can't.
Well, let's get a good, solid look at it, because you're right. It's used in other cities.
It's used here.
Yeah, thank you. Good. Thank you very much. Good evening.
Hey, my name is Hiram Asmuth. I reside in Northeast Portland. The big issue, again, with me, just it's a resounding theme that you've heard tonight, and it's trust. You know, I have a difficult problem trusting you on two different levels. One is implementation, and the other is intent of this fee. You know, the implementation side, I mean, 3 minutes is not nearly enough. But, I mean, just to give a very stark example, Mr. McCullough did an in-depth research on the numbers provided him that he paid, you know, a couple $1,000s for, by the way. And he found thousands of businesses are miscategorized or somehow mischarged. And so there's major issues with that in that, you know, You would have a lot of legal challenges, which would inevitably cost the city more money in legal fees. You would have a lot of funds not getting paid. There's a $500 charge that supposedly is the charge. So I think that's another thing that would occasionally happen is some businesses that shouldn't be paying would get the $500 charge from the city that they may or may not pay, by the way, because they were miscategorized. You know, if you're trying to charge somebody $240, then it seems almost like blackmail and saying, well, you know, we're going to charge you $500 if you don't pay the $240, even though you're miscategorized. And if you want to challenge the miscategorization, you're going to have to go through a legal process or some sort of form that you're obviously going to have to spend a few thousand dollars to create. And that's just one of many implementation problems I see with this, you know.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I get the trust part, but it doesn't help us get to a solution, and you're going to lose your time soon, and I don't want you to miss a chance to tell us what if we did a referral, what would you like to see on it?
Well, I think the solution, you know, I'm more of the none of the above type, but I do really like, you know, his idea of the parking sticker. That's one of the very few ideas that I could, you know, possibly look at and support. But just in general, I you know, to be honest with you, I you know, it's hard for us as citizens to, like, take time to really research these suggestions that you're bringing to us. This is your job to research these suggestions and have them set in stone and not have thousands of errors on a single document. And so if you're going to refer these three other options, you know, that have glaring holes that we've told you multiple times, we don't like any of these three options. You know, none of the above is perfectly, you know, a good summary, you know. But I want to get to intent real fast, too, though. You know, Charlie, I read something recently. I forgot when it was, but it was about 82nd. You know, 82nd is 213 Highway. It's managed by ODOT, and apparently you're trying to, you know, take that from ODOT and put it in the city. And I'm wondering, you know, so you keep saying that we need X amount of money and that we don't have enough right now. Why are you asking for more responsibility and for more of a financial burden when, in fact, we don't have the funds right there to take care of what we can? Could you just answer that for us?
Sure. No, I'd be happy to explain that. And then, again, I'll give you another minute or a little bit of a minute anyway. If you were convinced that the money needed to be raised, and if you were convinced that we needed to raise, as the auditor and the department have said, somewhere north of $75 million a year, let's say we're going to try for 50, hoping that the legislature does their job.
Yeah.
Where would you like that to come from? And maybe it's the sticker. But, I mean, we now and soon, we need those ideas. The reason that we've raised the issue of Powell Boulevard and 82nd and other state highways in the city is that there are all kinds of inefficiencies and problems created for neighborhoods by the fact that we've got these so-called orphan highways in the city. And the proposition that we want to advance with the state is we're not going to take it in its current condition, but in the long run, that ought to be a city street. It looks like a duck. It walks like a duck. People think of it as a neighborhood arterial. But first, ODOT, you need to put that thing into good condition and then deed it over to the city. That's already happened in some cases. Market Street downtown used to be a state highway.
Yeah.
Parts of Sandy Boulevard have been converted from state highway to city street. So this is an ongoing discussion with ODOT. It's frankly been largely frozen because the state hasn't had the money to put Powell Boulevard in good repair. They need to spend about $50 million on Powell alone, and we haven't had the money to maintain it.
Gotcha.
But on the assumption that we're going to have some more maintenance money and that they're going to have the money to put these roads in a good condition, I believe that we ought to continue that transition of having the state run the highway system, I-5, I-84, I-205,
sure,
and the city take care of the arterial streets, regardless of what label has been on them for the last 100 years. That's the theory. So, yeah, again, don't have to finish this conversation.
By the way, the same mayor, the same principle applies to the larger question of who maintains the bridges.
Right.
And one thing I have learned as the person who does most of the laundry in my family and goes to the laundromat and does most of the grocery store shopping, goes to Fred Meyer, is that the person who comes up to me because they may recognize me or think that I'm in government very rarely cares which level of government I'm from. They have a concern. And it seems kind of odd that on streets you'd have to, like, first get a lawyer to tell you whether it's federal, state, city, county, and then blah, blah, blah. I think most people would like to know that someone is handling it. So you can agree, it may be a good idea or a bad idea, but it's been taken up in the past around one entity managing the bridges, some better coordination on the streets. The mayor is a pretty good negotiator. He's not going to take on a street with a liability. So I think you could give him the credit for that, whether it's a good idea to take it on or not. We couldn't do any worse than ODOT on a couple of these roads. The mayor, I guess, thinks that if we had it in our fold with the resources, that we could then bring them up to our, to the safety standards that we're hearing from the community. But that's not. I hope you don't see that as a trust or intent issue. That may be just a good government issue. And as long as the funding is there, I think we could probably persuade you that we shouldn't have multiple players doing providing a basic service.
Well, not to go too far afield, there's been a huge hue and cry raised from neighborhoods along those streets saying we want to have the ability to plan this street as a main street for our neighborhood, and the state highway department treats it like a state highway. And so we've actually had a lot of pressure from citizens in those neighborhoods to do this, but I'm not going to do it until we've got the road in good condition. That's not financially responsible.
Yeah, it would be cart before horse. You know, it's just that I've been here since 98, and, you know, I bike around Portland, and I drive around Portland all over the time because I do a lot of political door knocking, and I know all of these neighborhoods. And it's what I constantly see is I just see, like, inefficient things happening. You know, I mean, I'll see, like, there will be bumps on a street, you know, one year, and then 2 years down, no bumps, like they took them out, and then bumps again, like 2 years later, and it's confusing to me, and you know, there's, and then you'll be driving down these streets that are fine, that you don't see them needing paving, and then they'll get paved, and then meanwhile, East Portland, you know, like this lady came up as an advocate, I mean, East Portland is in disarray and has been for decades, you know, and it's kind of, it's very lunar, some areas in East Portland, and I think, why can't we prioritize? Why can't we be more prudent with the resources we have? And here's my take on it. If you guys can give us an exact number that isn't based on inconsistencies, that's not based on taking on roads that we don't have right now, if you can give us something more concrete, then maybe it would be a little bit easier to trust you on needing the money. But it's really hard to trust you on that when there's so much inefficiency across the board, and not just in this bureau, but in many others. And basically, you're asking us for money. It's a dangerous precedent. It's a really dangerous precedent. If you're going to come to your citizens and say, you know, because these past city councils over the past, you know, 14 years have overlooked some things, we're going to have you guys take it on, as you guys, as in us, the citizens, take on the burden. I mean, that this is a government job. The government is supposed to take on the government burdens and the government mistakes of the past. In order to establish that trust, you have to establish the need. And it also, like, you have to really entertain, you know, the ideas that people are more agreeing with. And I think it's disingenuous to put these three options that you have been told by numerous people time and again. These are all terrible options, and we've basically line item explain to you, you know, point by point why they're bad options. So if you're going to put some options on the ballot, at least make them legitimate, and at least put them to a vote if in fact you have one or two or three of these things coming through with any kind of favorable response, because the voters at the very least, we deserve to you know, have our voice heard on how we're going to be, you know, paying our fees when it's an extra one, and not just have three people decide, you know, for $900,000. Anyways, that's my take.
I appreciate that. And again, I want to encourage you, as others here that are interested in the question of can you trust us to spend your money, to look at the budget in the budget process. And by the way, Commissioner Novick didn't say no one came to budget hearings. He said few people came to budget hearings to urge cuts. We had 300 people in David Douglas High School auditorium at a budget hearing last fall. So we have a robust public participation process in the budget process, and I encourage you and anybody else that's interested in how we spend your money to participate in that. And frankly, as the city's budgeter-in-chief, because one of my responsibilities as mayor is to propose the budget, I take that very seriously. And if you come to my office anytime between January and April, you'll see a pile of budgets on our conference room table, because there's a lot to it. That's not to try to wave you off and say you're not going to be able to read all that. I'm saying there's just a lot to it. I'm very proud of the budgets that this council has approved in the 2 years that I've been here. In the first year, we cut $21 million out of the general fund budget because we had to, and that was hard, and we did it, I think, well. And then since then, we had a little bit of extra revenue, and we used most of it to pay off old debt. So I'm proud of the way that we've spent money. I got in trouble with one of the local news media because I said I'd dare anybody to show up on my front door. I dare anybody to find $10 in my proposed budget that's misallocated, that isn't following the law or good budget policy, and I'll show up on their front porch with a TV camera and $100. So, you know, that offer still stands because I take that responsibility seriously to propose a balanced and legal and proper budget. But that's my opinion of my budget. Your opinion of my proposed budget is also completely admissible, and when I put it on the table in about 6 weeks, I hope you look at it.
Absolutely, yeah, I'll do that.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, if I might, I actually found the email that the city attorney sent to me about the idea of a vehicle sticker. And what he said is that we are prohibited from imposing vehicle registration fees, and ORS 801.410 defines registration as the recording of a vehicle is authorized for use within a jurisdiction. So that was why he felt that if we said that any vehicle that is used in Portland has to get the sticker, he thinks that that would be considered a registration fee. So I just wanted to, I don't know if that closes the discussion, but I had it, so I thought I'd...
We'll take a fresh look at it, because the question is, we do this now in districts, not citywide.
Right.
So, you know, let's think about it. Good evening.
And just, excuse me, just before you move on, we had over 100 people in our budget, in our parks budget meeting last night. It's not just transportation that doesn't have enough money. You know, we passed the parks bond, which I'm very, very grateful to the voters for providing $68 million.
Yeah.
That's $68 million out of $365 million that we need over the next 10 years for parks. So we have citizens in every single bureau who dive into the budgets and try to help us find revenue and fund the services that the citizens of Portland want and need.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you.
Could you move just a little closer so we can have the benefit of your testimony?
I need a longer neck to do that.
Actually, if you move the whole thing closer to you, it moves.
Slides. There you go.
Over there.
Thank you.
Just give us your name.
My name's Roger Hall, and I live in Northeast Portland. You put some fences around what I can talk about that I wasn't expecting, but fortunately, Commissioner Novick tore down the fence because he said he hasn't heard anything about property taxes, and so I'm going to talk about that.
Go for it.
But first off, I want to tell you about when I was young. And when I was young, I used to read about old people being taxed out of their homes, and now I'm an old people, and I'm feeling it, and I'm seeing it all around me. And I brought... My wife and I moved here. She's that pretty lady in the Norwegian hat back there. Cute hat, isn't it? Anyway, here's my tax for 10 years ago, and my property tax was $3,025. Here's my tax for last year and this year. Last year is $4,300. And I was reading the paper where things were going to go up by 9%. The difference between $3,000 and $4,300 is about 40% over 10 years. Not bad, I guess. And my taxes this year, $5,850, from $43 to $5,850. That's 30% in 1 year. So I read the piece of paper here, and it says, you want to appeal? Well, sure you can, for two reasons. You don't agree with the value of the house, or you're protesting a late filing. I paid the entire amount up early to get that little mount off. But then I called, and it also says if you want to appeal, there's a $30 filing fee. Everything costs. And where's the money come from? 10 years ago, I could get five big, beautiful apples for a dollar. Now I can get one. So anyway, I called, and the lady I spoke to, I don't know who she was, she said, when I told her, mine went up 30%, and it was supposed to be 9% on average. What happened? And she's talked to some fascinating stuff about compression and decompression. And I was a Navy diver. I know about decompression.
But her decompression, I could not figure out for the life of me. Finally, I just said, thank you very much. I've already sent my money, and I'll go bleed in the corner on my own. And that's where my wife and I are at. We're watching our neighbors got a foreclosure right across the street going on.
Sir, without giving us your address, what quadrant of the city do you live in?
About 2 blocks north of Gleason and 1 block east of 82nd. Corner house, beautiful house. Yellow house, white picket fence. Can't miss it. So anyway, now, to be fair with the mayor, what do I support? Well, I'm kind of not much of anything, but if I have to support one, it's gas tax. But gas tax has to catch those people that live out there on the outside or right close to the border where they can just drive across 2 blocks to the gas station there and beat it. Am I out of time already?
We'll give you a little more. Keep going.
Anyway.
By the way, that's one of the challenges, sir, with the gas tax. We had the lobbyist for the industry here at one of our hearings explaining that, you know, reminding us that our jurisdiction only covers the city. And if the price is not competitive with other parts of the region, then what we'll be doing is just encouraging people to drive farther to get a better price outside the city, and that's one of the market dynamics and problems with.
Well, I'm just saying if they work in town and their paycheck is paid by somebody in town, and I assume there's some way of knowing that, then they should have some kind of fee that somehow they should contribute because they're wearing out the roads. And also the buses and the TriMet and the rail, they need to somehow be assessed because maybe the tax, the prices of the tickets have to go up a little bit, whatever, but those people, they're riding the roads too. They just have to be railroads or buses on the streets. And then I'm really bothered by, I know it's a bad thing to bring up, but it's called PERS retirement. The arts tax, we paid it, and then we found out that we don't owe that, and they don't pay it. Well, and I'm a retiree who doesn't owe it either, but I paid it anyhow. You can't get it back once you pay it. I found that out. So anyway.
Sir, I have some good news for you.
There's a guy right there who can help
Mr.
you.
Mr. Lanham, who administers the program, is going to give you that money back. you are already $35 in the and if
I don't
all
want
the nice
it back.
Things you said about your bride.
That's
I hope
my
you take
point.
Her out for a nice dinner That's on that $35. So,
my point is, I enjoy the arts, what that provides, and so do the PERS retirees. Whatever we do, you can't use a income tax because if you do, then they're fenced.
That's and a problem with that.
They can't be fenced. I can't be fenced. No, nobody who uses these facilities can be fenced, and it's up to you, not me. Don't ask me how to do that. That's your job. Figure out how every person who benefits from whatever it is pays for whatever it is. But now, back to my original point, I agree with the people who said you gotta a bottoms-up review. You've got to do what's necessary. I bled when I read about the director of sewers going out here with $250,000. I fired a fair number of people in my life, and I didn't give them anything.
Thank you. Appreciate you coming tonight. Appreciate that. And yeah, talk to Mr. Lanham because if you're a PERS retiree, you might have.
I don't want the money back. I want everybody to pay.
That's fair. No, we appreciate that point. That is a problem with an income tax approach. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for your donation for the ARCS tax. I know that a number of PERS employees also do pay for the on a voluntary basis. Thank you.
Okay, next three people, please.
Our Richard Essie, I believe it's Lynn Fung, and Michael O'Callaghan.
Come on up.
What about Laura Jackson and you? Oh, wait, hold on.
I think you've got those three. Good evening. Who'd like to go first? Go ahead.
Maybe first.
I was the last one called.
Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I want to congratulate you for this political process.
Okay. Give us your name.
Michael O'Callaghan, and I live in Southeast Portland. I appreciate that this political process has been very complex, but I appreciate that people are being listened to and you're asking for ideas. Okay, first of all, I want to focus on authority, okay, air pollution authority. This is my significant concern, although I realize streets are a concern. Okay, I want to apply the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. Okay, gas tax is simple. I can support that. I want to kill three birds with one stone, though. I want to clean up our air, I want to eliminate freeway rush hour traffic, and I want to maintain our streets. How are we going to do this? Okay, what we do is, first of all, you define rush hour traffic as, say, 7:15 to 8:30 a.m. and 4:15 to 6 p.m. Photo all the cars on the freeway. If you are on the freeway in a vehicle more than three times a month, you're assessed a clean air fee of approximately $30 a month. Now, 16% of the traffic on the road is trucks. Trucks loaded weigh 40 times as much as a car. That's why all your bridges are designed the way they are. That's basically why the roads need to be maintained. Now, these trucks need to pay a fee of going in rush hour traffic, X amount. You guys can figure out what it is per 1,000 pounds. Okay, now the revenue off of this, okay? Half of it goes to street maintenance, and I want half of it to go to pollution-free, pollution reduction transportation systems, i.e. a free bus. Okay, so people that don't want to use the freeways have a transportation system that moves them quickly and efficiently. Okay, also we would build safety corridors and what I call non-polluting transport roads. Now, all these kids walking to school, it's very unsafe to walk to school, as you pointed out, Mayor. A lot of people have been killed on the roads. Cars are very dangerous things. I personally, being a bicycle rider, don't like cars. They hurt me. Okay, they're dangerous. Okay, they pollute the air that I breathed that was clean. I didn't give them the right to pollute that air. Okay, I want my air cleaner. Okay, and this would do that. And politically, it could be enlarged to all of Metro. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Good evening.
Hi. My name is Laura Jackson. I live in Southeast Portland, roughly 45th and Division. I will do what I was told to do, which is tell you guys what I think should be proposed taxes. I support a gas tax, and I was not aware of this issue that we can't tag on to, for example, Multnomah County's registration fee. But I would support a gas tax paralleled or coupled with a registration fee, primarily so that cars like Priuses and electric cars that don't pay a gas tax still put money into the system.
Could you hold that thought for a second? Because you just said we couldn't tag on to the Multnomah County, and I'm not
sure. I didn't say tag on to do something like what Multnomah County did.
Yeah.
But you're raising another interesting point, which is, could we, by intergovernmental agreement, do something with Multnomah County where they are, in effect, are the party that generates the revenue, and we have some agreement as to how it's expended?
Well, at the risk of something or other, I think if Multnomah County wanted to raise the vehicle registration fee a lot more, they might have paid off all of the Selwood Bridge instead of asking us to pay for $80 million of it.
But it's a question of can they do that? Fair enough.
You said we can't do it, but if someone else can and we have a relationship with them, that may be another
okay.
way.
Okay. So in my fantasy world of like what I would be willing to support in this sort of thing would be some sort of gas tax coupled with a registration fee for the vehicles that do not buy fuel. I feel like there's enough people that come in from Vancouver, that come in from the other counties, that occasionally at least would be buying gas there. Plus people like me who do most of my driving, at least my discretionary driving, happens to be in Washington State visiting elderly parents. I buy a lot of my gas in Washington State just because that's where the miles are accruing on my car, and that is where I am putting the mileage on the roads. I don't mind this concept of the recommendation vote, but I think whatever is come up with either out of that, or I'm guessing it's going to be your tax cocktail, as you were talking about, some combination of this, that, and the other thing to make the money that we need, that has got to go to the voters. And part of the issue of trust people have talked about again, one of my big issues with trust, I was a transportation planner for about 25 years up in King County mostly. And we had a huge thing with pavement maintenance. And one of the big things that pretty much every jurisdiction up there did was say, okay, we're going to get our water bureau, our sewer, our electric, our gas. Everybody's going to be on the same page. So we don't have Clinton Street or Lincoln Street where the street gets paved by the transportation department. And then 2 years later, sewer comes in and digs up a whole bunch of it. I walk on Lincoln and I run on Clinton or bike on Clinton pretty much every day. And it's just appalling to me, all the great work that got done on there in the past 4 or 5 years for paving that's being torn up. So that's kind of what, you know, it's a quid pro quo. I'm willing to give you guys money to do this, but you got to give me something back. And part of that is the trust that there's going to be coordination between the bureaus, coordination with private utilities so that this beautiful new division pavement we've got doesn't have the gas company coming in 2 weeks to dig it all up for one of the new apartment buildings. Or if they do, that they have to bring it back, not just their little trench, but the full pavement section to quality pavement. The final thing I want to say is the way this thing is structured right now between the residential and the non-residential fees, Mr. McCullough pointed it out really well, is a lot of these businesses are one-man, sole proprietor, home-based businesses. And we were looking at, my husband's an engineering consultant, Charlie knows him. Yep. We were looking at a fee of $216 a year.
Not anymore, though. Not,
okay. Well, that was the business fee that was lined up for our house, yeah. Our business fee. That's twice what Stumptown Coffee Roasters was shown as. Okay? And we would be paying an income tax fee on top of that. That's double taxation for one person, one income based out of his home who has virtually no transportation impact. I sent you guys all a letter today.
Yeah, that's so
I
good.
Encourage you to read it.
Yeah, let me ask you a follow-up question there, Lori, and that is, if, assuming, let's set aside, you're right, we got to make sure that businesses are classified correctly and that big ones pay a big amount and small ones pay a small amount. And that's the question that Mr. McCullough has raised, which is, do we have that methodology right? Fair question, we've got to get it right. No argument there. But the general principle that we've been operating on is that business ought to pay about half the cost of this maintenance effort, and residents ought to pay about half as well. Do you think that's a rough justice?
I think it's fair if you take home-based sole proprietorships out of the equation. When I look around my neighborhood, just our block face, and I know what people do. We have a retired accountant who does taxes for his friends, who has a business license so that he can take tax deductions. We have an award-winning graphic novel writer who, again, is shown as a five-person recreational business. We have two retired nuns who live in a house owned by their church who were shown as a business. My husband's an engineering consultant who primarily works in Washington State. You know, we're residents, and our businesses do not impact the transportation system any more than the average Joe homeowner. So don't tax us twice.
And I think that's a fair point, particularly because during the recession, we saw a lot of people who were displaced went and got business licenses and became sole proprietors, worked out of their home.
Which is what we did.
And the other thing is, I just want to comment that I think you made Steve's night with something you said earlier. And since he's so modest, I'll brag on him. He and Director Treat have already started, put into place a program that is very innovative, which would actually address a concern you raised earlier, which is to have government and the private utilities and others have a single database of projects so that we don't dig up, pave. And in fact, because Commissioner Novick has transportation and I have water, sewer, stormwater, those are the three major utility bureaus, if this thing works out, and that's a big if, it will precisely address the issue
and
you have.
I mean, to me, that's the give. We give you money, but you've got to show us that you're actually spending it.
Right, but we have to get our friends in the private sector to agree to fully participate, but we get it. And to Steve's credit and to Leah's credit, they've been leading the effort on that.
That was actually, Leah saw that idea implemented in Chicago, and right now we're doing a review to see how these different entities can talk to each other and how we can set up a software system like that. I do want to say on the home-based businesses that based on the amendments we did the other week, home-based businesses with less than $50,000 in annual revenues are completely exempt from the fee.
And I want you to know that I actually printed out your email and gave it to Commissioner Novick because I thought it was so helpful to me, somebody who hasn't been into the details of all the businesses. I just felt the way that you wrote it and your testimony tonight has been very helpful. Thank you.
$50,000 is exempt, and we also have a business owner's compensation deduction of $100,000, and we hope to get it to $125,000. So points well taken.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good evening.